VGMP.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. I am your host, Jamie Evans, joined by my other host, Mr. Rory Jocelyn.
Hello, everybody.
Now, we will say off the bat here, we'd like to apologise in advance for any fits of coughing you may hear. Poor Rory is actually quite ill as we're recording this, but we didn't want you guys to go without an episode, and we were just so desperate to talk about Street Fighter. But I'ma never give up, cause I'm a Street Fighter! Which is a song that was released on vinyl in the 90s. Which I have. I don't even like Street Fighter as a series, but I got this. It was one of many for the pop charts released techno dance tracks for video gaming. Probably the most infamous was the Ambassadors of MC Funk, I think they were called, which was actually a British artist who went by a million other fucking names.
Right.
He basically did an album for Super Mario World, and it was rap. My mom, she thinks I'm crazy. But I got to rescue Daisy.
Wonderful. That seems totally appropriate.
Yes.
So today we're talking about Street Fighter 2, the animated movie.
These people think I'm crazy, but I'ma go and rescue Daisy.
Clearly you're not sick enough. Hang on, let me see if we can get a vial of coronavirus here.
My corona.
Anyway.
I've been off for a week. I'm very bad.
Street Fighter 2, the animated movie, came out in 1994. Now, this is a... Is this a sequel to Street Fighter 2, the game, or is it an adaptation of Street Fighter 2?
So, this isn't connected to Street Fighter 1.
No, because I just said Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, no, hang on.
I get what you mean.
Yeah, it's not related to the Hollywood movie, which
with
actually,
Raul Julia in it.
Yeah, but actually at the end of this film, if you watched it through the credits, there's a thing at the end that the Japanese audience got to say, the new Street Fighter movie from Hollywood coming out in 95. So this was almost like a promotional tool for that by chance. Mm. This is an adaptation, I believe, of Street Fighter 2, because literally no one cares about Street Fighter 1.
Yep.
Street Fighter 1 does not deserve any love, apparently. I've not played it, but apparently it plays like garbage.
Yeah.
You could only be Ryu.
Yeah.
And it was a single player only game where you go through the levels fighting, and people like Sagat are in it, yeah, but
well,
again,
Sagat's the
villains.
Last boss.
Yeah.
I looked it up, and Bison did not turn up until the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Can we talk for a minute about how terrible a name for a villain Bison is?
So,
Yes, I know it's M. Bison, and I know it's because they switched him around, but they shouldn't have done, because his name was originally Vega.
Yes.
Vega is, which they apparently changed for two reasons. I looked this up.
Okay.
One was the story you're probably going to tell about Mike Tyson.
Yep.
But the other is they decided in the West that Vega wasn't a threatening enough name. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but Bison is. I'm sorry, but Vega is a way more threatening name. V names make great villain names. Vladimir, Vincent, Veronica, Vincenzo.
Vincenzo?
Vincentio.
In what?
Well, it's just saying it's a creepy name.
You can't just make up V names.
That's not a made up name, it's an Italian name.
Yeah. I mean, like, as a villain.
There'll definitely be a character called Vincenzo at some point.
At some point, Jesus Christ.
In the hundreds and hundreds of TV and movies and books.
Not a single Vincenzo out there.
My point is, they are all much, much better villain names.
No, Bison is a large...
Bison.
It's cattle, actually, isn't it?
It's a large cattle, yeah.
That's a good point.
That basically got hunted to near extinction.
But it has massive horns.
Actually, their horns are pretty tiny compared to their head.
What, the... On a bison?
Yeah, like comparative to their head size.
Oh, that's a good point.
You want something with big horns, my friend. You want a Texan Longhorn. You ever seen one of them?
Now, can you imagine if the villain was called Texan Longhorn?
That's actually a better name.
I agree with you on that.
Because you wouldn't give him horns. And people are like, why are you called Texan Longhorn? He'd be like, the Longhorn is my dick. Have you ever seen a Texan Longhorn?
No.
Dude, look up a Texan Longhorn when you get a chance.
Right.
Honestly, I don't know how they hold their heads up.
Right.
Their horns are huge.
Oh, interesting. and they come out to the side. So say this is their head.
Yeah.
The horn comes out to about here and then curves upwards.
Nice. Mm. That is cool. But yeah, so Texan Longhorn should have been his name, I agree.
Mm. Anyway, do you want to tell your Mike Tyson story quickly?
Yeah, so basically in the original Japanese one, and you can see it in this film actually, when Chun-Li is showing the main villains.
On the screen, yeah.
On the screens, the visuals still show the original Japanese character names. So who we know as Vega now, who is the bladed Spanish bullfighter sort of guy, he was originally called Balrog, which actually makes sense as a Spanish name. The name of Balrog then went to the boxer.
Who was originally M. Bison.
Who was originally M. Bison, because it was meant to be like a play on Mike Tyson, which is why Balrog looks like Mike Tyson. But then when they took it to America, they were like, yeah, Mike Tyson might not be happy with this, especially since Nintendo already have an agreement in place with him
for
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. So they swapped the names around for that reason as well. And then, of course, M. Bison went away from being the boxer guy, instead went to the main villain. The reason those three are the ones who had their names cycled is because none of the three of them were in the original Street Fighter 2. Mm. I think Bison might have been in it as the villain. Mm. I don't know. But I do know that those three got added in a later revision. Mm. As three extra characters.
Right.
And so it was only during that revision that those three got cycled. The other one was Fei Long. See, I don't know a lot about Street Fighter 2. Mm. I know that multiple revisions added characters. One of those added characters, I believe in Turbo, was Fei Long, who was basically Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And Fei Long is in this film as well.
Played by Heisenberg.
Played by, yes, by Bryan Cranston himself under a pseudonym.
I am the one who knocks.
It would have been cool if you'd said that, but obviously it's like 20 years too soon. Yeah, yeah.
This is around the time he was still doing voices in Power Rangers.
Yes. Yes, it was. Bryan Cranston's had a bit of an odd career, hasn't he? Because during the early to mid-90s, he was basically a nobody who did voices.
Voices, and he was a recurring character on Seinfeld.
Oh, was he?
He was, okay. Yeah, he was Jerry. He was like, you know, kind of like how Janice is like a one appearance per season
sure.
character.
He was one
I think
of those.
He was like that on Seinfeld. He was Jerry Seinfeld's dentist.
Right, okay.
And there's actually a really good outtake you can find from Seinfeld. I've never really seen Seinfeld. It doesn't look very interesting to me. But there's a good outtake you can find where it's a scene that's got him and Jerry in it. And Bryan Cranston keeps improvising. And it's just one line, it's just this one word that he keeps changing. Every time he says it, Jerry Seinfeld breaks on camera.
Oh, okay.
And they had to do like 12 takes to get it right, because he just couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, I tried watching Seinfeld multiple times, because it's a big 90s comedy show. Mm. Generally, that's my jam. A lot of people love it. It has a massive following.
With the possible exception of Friends, it's usually that and Friends that are argued to be
the best
sitcom ever made.
Yeah, and they compete with each other on basically completely different audiences. Yeah. Like, if you like Friends to a huge degree, you tend not to like Seinfeld and vice versa. Yeah. I'll be honest, I tried watching, maybe I need to get through season one, but I've tried watching most of season one of Seinfeld. It did not work for me at all. I was sitting there going, why is this funny?
Yeah, I think the problem is Seinfeld, from what I've heard, the point of Seinfeld is all the characters are dickheads in it.
Right.
It's the point, but...
So it has that Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
kind
but
of.
I don't think that was working in the 90s. I think it works better now.
I don't know, because I've never fully gotten behind Always Sunny in the way that you have.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a generational thing in that sense, because I think Seinfeld was an older comedy in the 90s, like compared to Friends. Friends had a younger audience.
Yeah.
I think Seinfeld had an older audience for its time.
Right.
And I think Always Sunny's kind of like that. It came out after... I'd already had my edgy comedies, which are ones that you tend not to like, things like South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that comedy tends to be almost in generational columns.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, Bryan Cranston's in this very briefly,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't recognise that it was him for years.
Oh, did you
not?
Having
watched this film, no, until you mentioned it. And then when I watched it, I go, of course it's Bryan
Cranston. Yeah,
It's unmistakably Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, no, for me it was straight away. I was like, Heisenberg?
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's doing all the whoops and the woos during the fight scene, though.
I reckon he is.
Do you reckon he is?
Having seen him do Power Rangers, it's definitely not above him to do it.
Fair enough.
Because in Power Rangers, he's doing a proper, like, sort of character.
A lot of the voices sound quite similar to what the character says in the game, from what I recall.
Mm.
So there's things like, what? things like that, which, you know, are stupid and ridiculous, I understand, but they are from the game, I believe.
Well, have you ever seen...
This is what Fei Long does when he's doing his fight in this film.
Have you ever seen the famous story, you know, Keely Hawes, who voiced Lara Croft in Tomb Raider Legend, Tomb Raider Underworld, and Tomb Raider Anniversary?
Yes.
There's a famous clip of her on the Graham Norton show, where she's on about when they took her in to do that, to do her voice recording, and they took her in to do all of the action noises, so like the getting hit, climbing up things.
Sure.
And there's a bit where they wanted to do a karate chop, and she specifically didn't want to be racist and didn't want to do the hi-ya.
So, yeah.
So she keeps doing it more like sort of thing. And the director, who's a Japanese guy, is going, no, 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 no. And she goes, okay, show me what he goes it and goes, hi-ya! Like that. And she's like, that's what you want. I'm trying not to do that because I didn't want to be racist, but that's actually what
Japanese
you want.
Don't give a shit.
This is the thing. Sometimes we overthink it to a huge degree.
They sit and they go, no, hi-ya is fun. Everyone knows what that is.
Everyone knows hi-ya.
Yeah. Just do hi-ya. Anyway. Shut up and get over there.
So before we move on to talk about Street Fighter 2 and our experiences, limited though they are, with the Street Fighter franchise, we have received a piece of fan mail.
Yay!
Although letter of complaint might be more accurate.
Oh, well, then why did you introduce it as fan mail?
Because it's the first piece we've had.
oh, well, that's sad. The first piece of quote-unquote fan mail is, you guys suck.
Now, I'm going to read this out, and we can react to it.
Okay.
Dear VGMP hosting team.
Ooh, we're a hosting
nice
team.
Nice and formal.
Ooh, I like it.
Long-time listener, first-time emailer. I've been listening to your show since the early days, but have finally reached the breaking point where I feel I cannot keep silent any longer.
Oh no.
I had to write in and voice my distaste with the show. The idea of a podcast looking at video game adaptations is fantastic and, dare I say it, much needed.
Hooray.
It is just a shame that it is being hosted by two utter pillocks. Yes, that's right, pillocks.
Okay, yeah, he's English, I like it.
You claim to be experts in video game movies.
We've never claimed that.
You claim to be experts in video game movies, and yet you constantly underplay and downright insult the work of the best director in the field, Uwe Boll.
Oh, no.
I bet you think you're very funny with your raging Boll jokes, but the joke is on you, as Boll is most certainly the Martin Scorsese of the video game genre.
Oh my god, imagine that as a fucking sales pitch.
House of the Dead and Alone in the Dark are both peak horror movies.
No.
And Postal... and Postal may well be the most important movie made in the 21st century so far.
No.
I think Uwe Boll wrote this.
I think... before we move on, I just want to state... You know what? I don't like Postal at all. It's not my style of humour. It's gross out, it's bullshit, and it's racist and offensive where it tries to be, right? But if that's your jam, you do you, son. You enjoy. You fucking dare to tell me that Alone in the Dark is a great horror film. I fell asleep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You fell asleep?
It took me... 3 watches to get through Alone in the Dark.
It's
and
so
do you know
bad.
What? Do you know what? I don't think I've ever actually seen the ending of it.
I did. It was basically knockoff Alien, but I mean like knockoff as in high school
original movie.
No, I mean high school students
right.
with plastic face makeup in the dark.
Right.
And a bunch of soldiers having to fight them, but unlike it seeming like the film Aliens, all the armor and everything that the military were wearing was all paintball gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a typical low-budget thing to do, isn't it?
Fucking awful.
So back to the letter.
Yes.
Uwe Boll is one of the best directors working today.
Is he?
Second only, perhaps, to Michael Bay, whose films benefit from higher budgets, allowing more CGI explosions, which Boll usually has to go without.
Imagine, if you will, you're trying to sell a director on being the low-budget Michael Bay.
I know. Perhaps I shouldn't be surprised...
Freaking hell.
Perhaps I shouldn't be surprised about this, coming from two blokes who recommended Black Heaven and Fatal Frame, both pretentious and dull movies with hardly any explosions that require subtitles to watch.
Hey, hang on a minute. Hang on, no, I'm not having that, and I'll tell you for why, right? Fine, he's more than welcome to think that they're both pretentious, bad films because they're low on action, etc. Fine, I give him that. Mm. Have I not also recommended Need for Speed?
You did. He hasn't mentioned that.
No.
their video game recommendations aren't any better either. Alan Wake, more like Alan Fast Asleep, fancy recommending a game that goes an entire hour before you get to shoot anything. Boring, with 3 exclamation marks. At least that game's modern. The other host won't stop recommending games from a company that hasn't been relevant in 2 decades. Most people don't even remember that Sega used to make consoles.
You wound me, sir.
I think the hosts need to start recommending and discussing great games like Call of Duty, Fortnite, and Breath of the Wild.
I played Breath of the Wild. You're not going to get me with Breath of the Wild. I played Breath of the Wild. I sold the Switch because of it.
Really?
It was so boring and so bad.
Really? I hear that game get lots of praise.
It's terrible. It's GTA with Link in it.
Oh, okay.
And I hate open world games, so you know what? I was never going to recommend Breath of the Wild. But I gave it a shot. One of the big problems I have with Breath of the Wild, two big issues with Breath of the Wild. The biggest issue with Breath of the Wild is the stupid stamina mechanic.
Right.
So whenever you try and do anything, like walk near water, you get this fucking stamina meter and you can only do it for 5 seconds before Link collapses. And it's on everything. And then the other thing I hated was the stupid eating mechanic.
Right.
You know, you should mix foods and see what they all do. And then I'm not doing fucking can't cook, won't cook the video game.
Right.
I'm not here to make cookery shows.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And also, the other game, see, there's a game that I did love, Shenmue 3, had the same mechanic, and I slagged that mechanic off as well.
Right.
Because in order to regain your stamina, you need to eat in Shenmue 3, where you don't in the first two. The thing is, at least there's some comedy in that, in the fact that,
oh, the black garlic.
Yeah, because black garlic is the cheapest one that refuels the most health. Basically, Ryu Hazuki is just walking around this ancient Chinese village eating nothing but black garlic. His breath must stink.
Yes.
But yeah, no, Breath of the Wild you would get nothing out of me for.
So you think you should discuss great games like that, or else take their old dusty asses off the internet and go hang out in one of those arcade, in air quote, places they're always talking about.
There is one I want to visit. In Westcliff.
I can only assume that arcades are places old people used to hang out in back in the late 1900s. Jesus. Meanwhile, the rest of us are enjoying our life service games, microtransactions, and day one DLCs, the future of gaming.
He wants us to take our asses off of the internet for this stuff. But here's the other problem. We take our asses off the internet, I promise you, mate, no one else is going to dedicate a show to video game adaptations,
Lastly, if you're going to continue doing this podcast, which I can only assume you intend to do, given the recent move to the Impala Network, another terrible choice, by the way.
someone who's a Yogs fan, I think.
I must insist that you start showing more respect to Nintendo properties. You have previously trashed Legend of Zelda and Captain N the Game Master.
Dude, sorry. Have you watched those shows?
And Rory even tried to claim that the 1990s Super Mario Brothers was better than the masterpiece in italics put out by Illumination last year.
Hang on, I actually don't recall actually saying that.
You did say that.
I said it was more interesting.
I think the phrase may have been more interesting actually, yeah.
No, that's not the same. Saying something is more interesting, which it categorically is not saying it's better.
I bet you think you're pretty funny, constantly bashing out the Sega does what Nintendo don't line.
That's not me, to be fair.
Or your Bintendo quip from Sega Hard Girls.
Also not me.
You're not funny, you're just irritating and being disrespectful of the best company in gaming.
Sorry. Nintendo have not been relevant for 20 years.
I hope things improve, but I won't get my hopes up. Sincerely, Bulbo. Boy 17.
Ball boy.
Ball boy.
A ball boy.
P.S. If Jamie tries claiming one more time that Code Veronica is the best Resident Evil game, I will unsubscribe.
No, you know what? Sorry, Jamie. I have to agree with him there because we all know that clearly the best one is Operation Raccoon City. Doesn't mess around with story or tension. Just throws you straight into garbage action.
Well, that was an interesting take from what is clearly Uwe Boll in disguise.
I love it. I love it. It's good.
Some interesting takes on the future of gaming there. Thank you very much for writing in to us. If anyone else would like to write into VGMP,
and tell us how shit we are. I actually find that funny.
You can do so at info.impalafilms@gmail.com, where I will curate our letters, and maybe if we get enough, we can regularly read out some feedback, hopefully more positive than that. Unfortunately,
I am confused.
I cannot bring myself to recommend Call of Duty or Fortnite.
No.
Fortnite I've never played, to be fair.
No.
Black Ops. I liked the first Black Ops. One was all right.
I played Call of Duty once. And there was...
Which one?
Yes. It was at an internet cafe. That's how long ago I played Call of Duty.
Was it even Modern Warfare at that point, or were we still in World War II?
Yes, World War II.
Yeah. That's even before COD fans say it got good.
I only played it because it was on the internet cafe, and we got cheated on it because the owner went, right, I'll give you guys another hour if you can beat me at the game. So me and my two mates started winning, beating him at it. So he called friends in to come and help him defeat us.
Oh.
And it was like, no, that was... And then he went, well, you lost. So it was like, no, you cheated.
Yeah. Well, BoldBoy17, look on the bright side. We may have trashed your favourite director so far, but there's plenty of Uwe Boll films we haven't covered yet. So there's always the chance, however slim,
there are some
that he might impress us.
There's one that I know will be at least... not slit your wrists bad. I don't know if you want to take that as praise or not, which is In the Name of the King, A Dragon Siege Tale.
That sounds slit your wrists bad.
I mean, Jason Statham does play a farmer whose name is Farmer.
Yeah.
Which, you know, will give you an idea that the quality of writing isn't up there. But at the same token, it is, from what I recall, that one was relatively fun to watch.
Right.
As basically take it as epically shit Lord of the Rings and you'll at least enjoy yourself a little bit.
So let's move on to Street Fighter.
Yes.
Rory, what's your experience, if anything, with the Street Fighter games?
I have very little because I can't control the bastards. I was so much more into Mortal Kombat because the controls made more sense. And I know that sounds like a get-good problem, but honestly, the whole half-turn Z move on a stick and all that shit, mate, that ain't happening. I've tried many times. I own Street Fighter 2 about 7 different ways.
Really?
And couldn't... honestly, every time it came out, I was like, it's a classic. It must be brilliant because everyone loves it. And every time I've bought it, I've been disappointed.
Yeah.
Mostly by my own inept ability to be able to perform half the moves.
Yeah.
The one time I'll give myself credit is Street Fighter, the movie, the game. Simply because the reason I can't pull off the moves in that is because the game is garbagely programmed.
Right.
Not just a lack of my skill. But with Street Fighter 2, it's probably a skill issue.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have the same problem, which is why the new Street Fighter introduces a different game playing mechanic that a lot of people who previously couldn't play Street Fighter can now play.
Yeah,
I've
heard
I'm kind of intrigued by that because I like the characters. As you know, I know they're kind of generic and it's just like, you've got the Bruce Lee character, you've got the old Japanese karate man, you've got the, you know, they're all American fucking stereotype with the big air. But the character design is cool and I've always wanted to get more into it.
Yeah.
With this film in particular, though, I actually had a copy of this on VHS at about 1998.
Right.
Maybe 99. And it was the first time I'd watched any Street Fighter related materials other than the Hollywood movie. The benefit is that the UK VHS certainly had the same soundtrack as the American release. So we had the better soundtrack. It's one of the only times that the Western soundtrack is better than the Japanese original.
Right.
So I watched it on VHS, upgraded that to the special edition DVD when that came out. And the DVD had the Japanese original soundtrack as well, which allowed me to compare. I tell you what, I nearly fell asleep watching the Japanese soundtrack one. I don't know why. The music's quite different. But also, the performances felt a little bit weak. Maybe it was just harder to follow because it was subtitles and I was only in my late teens.
Yeah.
But when it came out on Blu-ray, I bought it straight away because I knew I loved it.
Mm.
So it's been good fun. Catching back up with this film. This is one of the few times where the Japanese came out the gate and I think they got it right.
Right.
What about yourself?
I don't really have any experience with Street Fighter beyond I played about 2 rounds of Street Fighter 4 when I was in my first year at uni. My housemate got Street Fighter 4 was new.
Yep.
He got it. He loved it. They were very short rounds because he absolutely annihilated the living shit out of me. And I promptly noped the fuck out of there because I don't like 1v1 fighters anyway.
Mm.
And this one didn't have the jiggle physics to keep me entertained.
You're talking Dead or Alive.
Like Dead or Alive does. Mm. And even Dead or Alive, I don't like playing Dead or Alive either. I don't like any of them. I really don't like 1v1 fight. It's just a genre. Much like in movies, I don't really like Westerns. I don't really like 1v1 fighting games. I find them tedious and boring. And I think a lot of them... And I get why, because a lot of them started as arcade games.
Yeah.
A lot of them are programmed to be coin eaters.
Yeah, I think we've had a bit of a negative cycle with one-on-one fighting games, to be honest, because obviously they started off as coin eaters in the arcade. Yeah. They then came to consoles, they got a lot more features. As much as I never played it, at the time, Tekken was a big name, Virtua Fighter was big for Sega.
And I have to say...
Street Fighter, obviously, for Capcom. They also, to be fair, Capcom had a lot of one-on-one fighting game series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had Darkstalkers as well.
Yeah, it was their big thing at one point.
And then you had SNK as the other company that made the King of Fighters series. Yeah. And then you had crossovers like Capcom versus SNK, Capcom versus Marvel. Marvel vs. Capcom, yeah, that's right. And so it became such a huge staple during the 2000s, certainly. And then by the late 2000s, early 2010s, it changed, and it became, because of DLC, things like that. And to be fair, Dead or Alive was the one that sort of spearheaded this change. But during the 2010s, certainly, one-on-one fighting games become kind of fucking worthless again.
Yeah.
Because even though they're big budget, more characters than ever, etc., etc., everything got locked behind a paywall.
I have to say, and I'm not usually like this because I'm... There's a bit of a debate, a wide debate going on in gaming at the moment about value versus dollar cost. Which is, some people are saying that games like, for example, Resident Evil aren't worth the money... Only open world massive RPG games are worth that price because it's more game, more world for your money. Now, I disagree to an extent because I would much rather... I bought Alan Wake 2 for 55.
Oh, God, you're talking about the negative... I know. The horrible...
Sorry, Alan Fast Asleep. I bought Alan Fast Asleep 2.
Alan of Duty.
He took Dayquil Night Nurse Edition or whatever it's called. slept through the whole thing. He's been asleep for 13 years. That's why the game took so long to come out.
Absolutely.
I paid 55 quid for that, so it was slightly cheaper because it was on sale. I've enjoyed the fuck out of it. I played through it 3 or 4 times already.
Yeah.
I finished the final draft mode just before Christmas. We're only at the start of February as we record this, and I'm getting the itch at the back of my head to reinstall it and play it again.
Nice.
To me, that's 55 quid well spent.
To be honest, I've done that recently with Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Yeah. So this is where I'm going to sound like a hypocrite. And I want to be clear that here I speak only from my perspective.
Sure.
Not for other people. I personally would not spend 60 quid on a 1v1 fighting game.
Mm.
Because to me, there really is not enough content in a 1v1 fighting game.
See,
But that's because I wouldn't play it online. I wouldn't play it with friends.
You've also stated that it's not a genre that you would play anyway.
So very clearly, I want to be very clear, that is just my opinion. Yeah. We basically both have a limited experience with Street Fighter.
Yes.
So I went into this not really knowing what to expect.
Do you know much about the characters, at least? Because I knew a lot about the characters, mostly from this film and other things. But...
I knew. I could name some of them. I knew Ryu. I know Chun-Li's the girl with the massive legs. I know Cammy. I know Cammy more from a porn parody I saw one time.
Keep it classy. Why not? Jesus.
Hey, Cammy's my girl. My biggest problem with this film is there's not enough Cammy.
You do see her getting grappled.
Yes. Throw some Jello on her. I knew Ken. I knew Ryu. I know Akuma, who has a little cameo.
Yeah.
Big demon. I knew Bison, obviously. I tell you who I didn't know. E. Honda.
Oh, Eddie Honda.
I thought E. Honda. I knew there was a character in Street Fighter called E. Honda.
Yeah.
I thought that was the name of the Honda Civic that you beat up.
That would have been cool.
Like, I didn't realise it was an actual character's name. I thought it was... Because Street Fighter's the one where you can beat up a car, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Famously so.
Well, if you're going to have a name Honda...
obviously I'm going to assume it's the car.
I mean, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, like, I thought it was a Honda Civic.
Yeah, my motorbike's a Honda.
Oh, okay.
I should call it Eddie.
And obviously I know Hadouken.
Yes.
Hadouken.
And Ansatsuken.
No, I didn't know that one. Is that the one where he twirls in the air with his fist?
I believe so, yes.
Right.
Hang on. You've got the Hadouken, which is the fireball. You've got the Shiryuken, which is the jumping uppercut.
Right.
And then you've got the Ansatsuken, which is a spinning kick.
Right.
When I played the game previously, like when it was still the 2D version of it, whenever he did the Ansatsuken, it just sounded to me like Ryu was shouting, "Protect the Gherkin!" And I used to shout that. Because I wasn't at all irritating as a child.
You need to get your ears checked.
It's honestly, it sounds like Protect the Gherkin.
The amount of episodes of this show where you've misheard dialogue in the stupidest way. So we've now got Protect the Gherkin, Get a Load of Piss.
Get a Load of Piss.
What was the one Vision says?
Oh, Vision sounds like Pigeon. And then you've got the Incredible Iron Man that sounds like Good at Ironing Man.
Yeah, you need to get your ears checked, mate.
But
yeah, put it this way. My entire curiosity about watching Street Fighter was Chun-Li and Cammy. I literally couldn't care about anything else in this thing.
Not Guile.
Now, first of all, no, terrible character. Now, first of all...
Oh, you're going to make some
shall
enemies.
Shall we talk about how fucking ridiculously jacked every character in this anime is?
But, I mean, it's true to the games, to be fair.
No, these are on the same level as, have you ever seen the drawing of what Marcus Fenix's skeleton must look like?
Yes.
These people are built like some of the characters, not all of them, some of them are fairly proportionate. But there's one character who can fight, it's a big American bloke.
Yeah, T-Hawk.
Yeah. No.
What?
People just literally, like, it's not physically possible.
That's how he looks in the game.
Be that broad.
No, that's how he looks in the game.
No, I know, but
he's
still.
You are right, he's ridiculously wide.
Yeah.
See you after the break.
Cyberpunk Studios.
This is Joanna Barnsley and Greg Snyder from the Metropolitan Police Department. Can you open the door, please?
When the system monitors your every move.
My husband's asleep.
Your heat signature's the only one in the flat.
And your rights are locked behind a paywall.
It's not a crime to want a child.
Then you should have registered.
I can't earn £24,000 a year by myself. Minimum wage doesn't pay that.
You earn your privilege in this country.
If you don't comply within 5 seconds, my colleague will be forced to breach your door.
And that won't be good for you, your door, or my foot.
No!
Human Cargo.
Never gets easier, does it?
Honestly, I don't think it should.
A Cyberpunk Studios film, out now on Amazon Prime.
So basically, I'm not going to go through this plot by plot because, quite frankly, the plot's garbage.
The plot is very thin on the ground.
What I am going to say is this film was surprisingly better than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah?
In the sense of I thought I was just going to fall asleep. Mm. I fell asleep for a little bit of it, but that was due to a diabetic sugar crash. And you've already told me that I'd already seen the best bit of the film anyway. So surprisingly, the fights in this are quite good.
Yeah, for an animated film as well.
For an anime as well. They don't feel overly floaty.
No.
Which anime can be guilty of sometimes.
Yeah.
They feel impactful.
Yeah. What's quite surprising as well with this is that almost every single sequence was done by a different animation studio but it really doesn't feel too much like it.
Yeah, no, which probably shows how homogenous anime is as a genre.
Yeah, so I suppose it's luck and good because anime is quite homogenous, but it's also bad because it sort of shows a lack of creativity in a way.
Yeah.
However, there is a few giveaways. There are some scenes where, for example, the coloration is better than others.
Right.
And by that, I mean you can see there's more animated shading going on the characters. But you know they're all hand-drawn. They're all hand-painted. I recently watched, and we haven't covered this one yet, Tekken Bloodlines, which is a Netflix show, which has a, not a similar aesthetic, but it has a, it's going for the same sort of 2D one-on-one fighting action that this has. The difference is you can tell in several shots as well, quite blatantly, that Tekken Bloodlines is all 3D artwork.
Right.
And the 3D characters that are textured to look two-dimensional.
Okay.
And so it's quite good with some of the animation because when the camera rotates around them, it's quite smooth because it's actually rotating a 3D object. But whereas with this, they do the similar sort of effects, but they're all hand-drawn.
Mm.
There is just something a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more grounded about how this, how well-drawn 2D artwork feels. It's almost like the difference between practical effects and CGI effects.
Yeah.
There's something about it where it just, because it's got its own film grain to it and everything else, it just feels a bit more, not real, but a bit more like it actually exists somewhere in the world. Whereas when it's all CGI, you're right, it has more of a floaty feel to it.
Yeah.
And that can be a case in 2D animation as well because of the comparative skill or whatever the direction might be for a series. What I found surprising about this is while the story is not great, it's very basic. It's really hard to hang your hat on why this works so much better than a lot of the others because something like Mortal Kombat, etc., arguably the story is a little bit more detailed than this one. This is very base. Street Fighter doesn't really need a complex story.
So we're talking about the Paul Anderson Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, or basically any one-on-one fighting game movie adaptation.
I think the difference is two things. Thing number one is ridiculous plots are more forgivable when they're animated.
Yeah, that's probably true.
If this was live action, it'd be stupid as shit.
Yeah, that's true.
As I'm sure we'll find out when we do live-action Street Fighter. just the look of the characters. Like, a dude like M. Bison. In anime, they can draw him to actually look quite sinister. Because he's ridiculously proportioned. He's buff as fucking all hell. It looks like he drinks a carton of steroids a day. and they can do, like, these cool things with, like, his glasses look like he's got no eyes behind them sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Raul Julia is a great actor, but I already know without having seen it, and it sounds like they didn't even attempt to capture that same feeling.
No.
Ralph Julia is not hench as shit, for starters. In fact, I think he's actually quite small, isn't he, Ralph Julia?
Yes.
Quite a slim man, isn't he?
In some shots it showed because he was recovering from cancer at the time as well. So there were certain shots where he was skinnier than others.
Right. Let's be honest, he looks like a reject from the YMCA music video, doesn't he?
He looks like a man who would lead the YMCA music video.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA. The M stands for M Bison.
It does. It was Tuesday.
And I think the other thing is arguably Mortal Kombat has better lore, it depends on your taste for fantasy.
Sure.
Because Mortal Kombat is a more out there lore. Because it involves gods and magic and things like that.
Sorcerers.
The thing is, and I know you like it, so you won't necessarily agree. The problem is, if you're going to pull off Mortal Kombat, if you're going to pull either of them off as live action, Street Fighter will, I actually think Street Fighter should be, in theory, easier to pull off.
Right.
The problem with Mortal Kombat, the Paul Anderson film, none of it's very good. This is saved by its fight scenes.
Sure.
This actually feels, and I mean this in a criticizing way and a positive way, this animated movie kind of just feels like a handful of really cool fight scenes strung together with a completely unnecessary plot. Which, to be fair, that's what you're going to get when you adapt a 1v1 fighting arcade game into a film.
Yeah.
Because that's all it is. Mm. It's 1v1 fights
strung together by an unnecessary plot no one wants.
Yeah, no one's playing Street Fighter 2 for the plot.
I didn't need the sequence of Ryu running into a little orphan girl who spills milk everywhere.
Yeah.
And then just so he can see what a good dude he is, he gives her the money to go and get more milk.
Yeah.
That didn't lead anywhere. It was literally just there as a, look what a good dude Ryu is.
Yeah. I suppose you could put that as a character building moment, but at the same token, it doesn't come back to show him as a good character built man later on, because it's just big men slapping each other at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I suppose the idea of him being a more generous human being isn't really vital to his character.
Let's be honest, he's the most boring character in it, let's be honest. Yeah. Because he is template good guy, man.
Yeah.
There's literally never a second of doubt. Ken's a more interesting character because Ken's got a bit of more complexity to him. You know, he's got this more...
Ferrari.
Well, he's got this more possible darker side to him.
Yes.
Where he's fueled a lot more by sort of envy.
Yeah.
Whereas Ryu is just token good
he's
guy.
So good, there's not much left to explore in his character.
Yeah.
Once you've set up that he's a token good guy... There isn't really much else. Like, there's no challenge to Ryu.
Yeah.
They introduce it later on in the Street Fighter series.
Yeah.
With Dark Ryu.
Yeah.
But that's not something that is yet in the storyline and obviously wasn't even alluded to in this movie.
But just to finish my last point, I think basically Mortal Kombat, you'd have to have way better fight scenes because they're not very good in the 95 one. They're very wire worky, very...
Yeah, it was the first wire work Hollywood movie, though. So, I appreciate it for where it was.
It's
at
part
its
of
time.
Its age, yeah.
But yeah, I see your point.
It's very floaty, which is exactly what we're praising this for not being.
Yeah.
I think that, like I said, though, the plot in this is kind of... irrelevant. Like, I really didn't give a flying hoot about the orphan girl. I did not need the scene at all where Eonda is fighting...
Oh, Dalsim.
Dalsim.
Dalsim, the Dalsim. Indian guy.
The guy with the stretchy limbs.
Yeah.
Dalsim. Didn't need that. That was garbage.
Yeah, that was just so... there seems to be
it's
a lot
to cram
of...
all the characters
yeah,
in.
Yeah, because there's a fight between Blanka and Zangief as well, which is completely meaningless. It's just there at one point, just so that they're not omitted from the movie.
Yeah, and all I could think was that video I sent you a while back where he's like... where it's Zangief and Zangief alt skin.
Oh, yeah.
And they're married. And they're like, now we do Battle of Tongues.
Though, one bit I did find a bit weird, didn't go anywhere, it made no sense, was we first meet Balrog, the boxer guy, I think, at just before that fight takes place between Blanka and Zangief.
Yep.
And he's dressed as either a bodyguard, but he's in a full tuxedo, isn't he, in this event. And somebody asks him about something that M. Bison and goes, don't worry, everything will be fine. I made all the preparations myself. So clearly he's involved in M. Bison's shtick, whatever that may be. Then the fight starts. Zangief and Blanka start having this fight. And just as the fight gets towards its conclusion, the camera cuts to Balrog. He's obviously seeing this fight take place, gets an angry face on, goes, pulls this grimace. And then all of a sudden, the buttons of his top come undone.
Right.
As if, like, oh, shit, is he going to get involved in the fight for some reason, blah, blah. Just cuts, it never comes back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you're like, what? Why is he bursting out of his top for no reason? Like,
I'll tell you, this is a homoerotic movie.
I mean,
there are so many close-ups of, like, rippling abs and bulging biceps.
And feet at the end. In the final fight, there's so much
slept
feet.
Through that bit.
The feet are weird as well, man. Like, the big
so
toe
I'm
goes...
I'm assuming the final fight is M. Bison versus Ryu.
So, the final fight starts off with... Yeah, it's M. Bison versus Guile. Ken fights Ryu.
Right.
And then, after Ryu has defeated Ken, Eddie Honda has a fight with Balrog, and they fall off the edge of a cliff, so they're gone. Bison defeats Guile... Then Ryu and M. Bison have a fight.
Right.
And while they're fighting, Ken gets back to his feet and realizes he's been brainwashed, gets back to his old self. And then both Ken and Ryu fight and defeat M. Bison.
Okay. And when do M. Bison's robots come into it?
Yes.
They don't?
No.
Okay, cool.
All the robots are, for some reason, they're built as brick shithouses. They're hench. But all they do is literally watch and observe. They could have done that with anyone and a camera. It's just there to look sci-fi.
I thought what they were building to was they were, like, storing the combat data of all the fighters.
That would make sense.
Because that's a typical thing to do in a fighting game, isn't it? Is the final boss has everyone. They did it in Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
Eric Roberts gets those sunglasses that allow him to predict everyone's moves.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to do a similar thing here where these robots would have everyone's move sets.
No, nope, the robots never come back in. And while M. Bison is watching everyone's, like, stats and trying to find the fighter with the best stats, at the end, it basically comes down to a fact that M. Bison comes up to Ryu and goes, right, I know you're the strongest, but I can beat you up anyway because I've got the psycho powers. So join my side, otherwise I'll kill you. That's it.
Right.
And you're like, so the whole observing and trying to capture the best data, like, what?
Because the plot's irrelevant in this.
Yeah. So
let's talk about the best scene.
Well, before we get to the best scene, I want to say something else about this film. I think the reason is, like, this film doesn't have a great story by a long shake. It's like there's certain parts that work really well. I actually think the relationship between Guile and Chun-Li, certainly how it gets played at the very end, but it's a little too late, is quite sweet. But overall, the story is kind of meaningless. What saves this film is the fight scenes are very, very well done. But on top of that, this film actually knows how to build stakes quite consistently throughout the film. So each fight seems to lead to a bigger and better fight. And actually, the only negative I have of it is the best fight is the one we're about to discuss. And it isn't the final fight. The final fight between M. Bison, Ken and Ryu feels like it actually breaks what otherwise works in the film.
Which is a progression.
Yeah, because it gets to a point where Ken comes back and he's like, oh, you think you can both take me on? He breaks this chain, which I assume controls his psycho powers. He goes, fine then, I'll take you both on at your own level. Come on. And then he fights them without his psycho powers. And you're like, well, you've given yourself a handicap. Now you're fighting two instead of one.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? And then he still has this element of he will win until the director tells him to not win anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like they're earning the victory. Yeah. It's just people hammering away at each other until one fails.
I will give a compliment. This is very rare because I didn't like this film. I'll give a little compliment to Captain Marvel.
All right.
Now, I dislike Captain Marvel as a film, but there is a bit at the end, which arguably this doesn't work, but it does flip that, because that is a trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is the villain being like, oh, actually, even though I've got this weapon, I'm arrogant enough that I'm going to not use it or whatever and fight. Sure. And you're like, well, you would have won if you just used that. At the end of Captain Marvel, spoiler alert for Captain Marvel, Jude Law turns out to be the villain. Oh, yes, we didn't see it coming. The British actor in this American movie turns out to be the villain. Couldn't possibly have seen that coming.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking, wasn't he Vision? But that's
Paul Bettany. You're thinking Paul Bettany.
Same bloke.
Jude Law's the villain. Captain Marvel's obviously got all the fucking powers because she's Captain Marvel. She's as OP. She's Marvel Superman, and it's why she's a garbage character.
Yeah.
She's too powerful. And they do the reverse of it, where he's like, come on then, take me on in a fist fight. No powers, just mano-a-mano, blah, blah. And Captain Marvel's just like, why the fuck would I do that? It just blasts the living shit out of him. Which, of course, you would. That's like Superman going, oh, I'm going to fight you, but not use any of my powers.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
What's the point of you being Superman? Anyway, actually, before we get to the best fight, I'll tell you something the film does suffer with a little bit. They couldn't help this because they had no way of knowing at the time where his career would go. But I spent the whole film waiting for Bryan Cranston to come back, and he never does.
No, because he's not that significant at all, is he?
But he is easily the best actor in it.
Oh, I don't know.
He's
very
best.
Good in it. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Bryan Cranston. Why the fuck would I? But I think most of them do their job very, very well.
They do fine, but I do think Cranston's one of the best actors working today.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Yeah.
There's just a way that he plays his lines.
Right.
Where you're like, I'm intrigued by this character, who I otherwise wouldn't be, because he's generic and
He's just Bruce Lee.
He's as generic as Ryu is.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in him. I'm not interested in Ryu.
Maybe they should have put Bryan Cranston as Ryu.
Yes.
And before anyone goes, oh, that's racist, Ray, who's Japanese? Well, Fei Long is Chinese.
And all the characters are played with American accents, aren't they?
Yeah.
Even though they refer to Ryo explicitly as being Japanese.
Yeah, and Chun-Li is Chinese.
Yeah.
And the one bit I did like, actually, there's a couple of great lines from M. Bison in this that show his arrogance in a way that is that I enjoy myself with. There's one bit where he's in his evil lair, and he's got Vega, the bullfighting guy with the spiked hands, the Wolverine man.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there, he's got an image of Chun-Li, and he goes, I remember when I murdered her father back in blah, blah, blah. She's quite lovely, isn't she, Vega? And Vega's just looking, like, being completely silent, said nothing this whole scene. And then M. Bison goes, lovely, isn't she? And it goes on way too long. It's like his creepy level is like, beautiful thing.
It's them thighs, yeah. Man.
And then, what do you think, Vega? And Vega says literally nothing. He just raises his claw hand, and you hear this shwing from where the shine comes up. Then he goes, enough! Time to move. It's like, no, Bison, you're the only fucker who's been talking this whole time.
Yeah.
I can remember her father's unfortunate accident. It's so sad. Don't you think so, Vega? Enough.
As if fucking Vega's been taking up too much of your time, dirty little perv.
So the best fight in the film is Chun-Li versus Vega.
Yes, this builds up really well because it starts off with...
it's a surprise fight.
Yeah, you've got the fact of Guile and Chun-Li going around trying to connect to fighters like DJ, etc. That's all relatively largely useless, actually, in the grander scheme of things. But they're basically picking up the pieces about what's happening with M. Bison, robots, cyborg recording devices.
Yeah.
And then they split their separate ways for this particular evening. She says she's going to be at home, and she is, but she's in the shower, which is kind of hot, but it's very stereotypical of anime in this in the 90s. It was like, let's just make the women naked and stick them in a shower and just see full-on titty.
Wait, did you see full-on titty?
You see full-on titties. You weren't paying attention, were you?
How did I miss that bit?
You are a fool.
I thought you only saw from behind.
No, you see full-on titties, my friend. Wet titties.
I'm not going to put it back on in a minute.
Yeah, I told you, you should have paid attention. I told you in advance, knowing you'd appreciate that scene.
I remember you telling me that, and then I kind of watched the scene.
But you didn't, because you missed the titties.
And was like, oh, was that all it was?
Either way, so she's in the shower, so when he tries to call, she's not picking up.
Mm.
And eventually, during the fight, the phone gets knocked off the receiver, and he hears her being attacked. This whole sequence is really artfully done. And I'm not talking about titties anymore. I mean, like, when she gets out of the shower, there's a shot from the outside with two windows. One that is got curtains in front of it, one that doesn't. She gets silhouetted from one and then appears in the other. There's a lot of really good setup to this sequence. And then when the sequence actually takes place, you actually feel the ferocity of the scene,
yes.
Which is very hard to get in animation.
Yeah, very. I think it's because there's actual fucking blood.
Yeah, there's blood in it. She's taking horrendous damage. Like, he's actually clawing bits out of her as they fight. We know that she's at a disadvantage and he's at a full advantage, not just from the fact that she's barely clothed, which doesn't help, but the fact that he has the drop on her for the attack, but also the suggestion of what else may happen when she loses that fight. Something that I will praise this film for is that it doesn't mind going dark. This is the darkest scene of the film, and it works. And what's good is that they drove Guile far enough away that realistically she still has to win the fight for herself.
Yeah.
And he just comes along to save her to take her to the hospital.
Yeah.
But he doesn't arrive in time to save her because she's only a waif.
Yeah.
She actually kicks the shit out of Vega.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, she literally... Doesn't she win the fight by dropping, like, 8 fucking kicks straight to his face?
Yeah, and kicks him out of a window.
My only problem with the scene is when Vega took his own mask off, it would have been much more impactful. And this is just me wishful thinking. She should have shattered that on his face. Like, when, you know, when she first lands a kick on him?
Yeah.
She should have... And then he's like, my face, why would you do that to my face? Or something like that.
Yeah, I like the bit when she stamps on his face and twists.
Yeah,
and he goes, my face! my beautiful face, you bitch, I'll make you suffer.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was cool. That, but was that cool. Should have been from when the mask shatters into his
bits,
face.
Yeah, it should have been bits of porcelain, like, stuck in his face.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Because he's a better villain than M'Bison, in my opinion.
Oh, he's a lot more imposing in this.
It's a cooler look.
Yeah.
For a villain. Masked villains are always pretty cool.
Yeah. But also, I think the difference is M'Bison is... Well, in terms of aesthetic, he's a military leader.
Yeah, it's because he looks like he should be in the YMCA. That is the problem. He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. Because
he's wearing tight red leather.
It's not that tight everywhere.
Oh, there's a little easy access flap. Past the Vaseline.
All I want to do is get rimmed by a perfect genetic soldier. No, I made that up. That's not actually the quote.
No chance.
But for good.
But yes, this was a... I was surprised how good this was, actually, because as we've talked about before, I know this is a failing of my own, but I usually struggle to get into the animated movies that we do.
Yeah, they are a struggle, I find, more so than
it's
the live-action stuff.
It's an attitude I never thought I would have, because I understand on a sensible level that animation isn't just for children.
Yes, of course.
Like, on an intellectual level, I understand it.
Yeah.
I have a real hard time feeling it when I'm watching an animated movie. So many animated movies, I watch them and I'm like, who cares? This is inconsequential. It's all animated. Which is ridiculous, because, of course, it's inconsequential when it's acting as well, because,
it's not
you know, you know, in Scream, Ghostface isn't actually running around with a knife stabbing Neve Campbell.
No.
Like, I know that's not real, but it just feels more real.
There's usually, I think what it is usually with live action, when it's well performed, certainly, there's more nuance in facial expressions and things like that.
The suspension of disbelief seems easier, isn't it?
So you're more likely to believe the action going on because the micro expressions of the actors performing the roles. And if they don't give those, that's why an otherwise potentially good performance can come across incredibly wooden.
Yeah.
Because there's no micro expressions going on to convey all of the little emotions that happen when a decision or a situation unearths itself. Animation, by default, you're robbed of all of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, unless you're drawing every single micro expression, which no one ain't got time for that shit, usually the reactions have to be more exaggerated, which is why a lot of, certainly modern cartoons and modern anime, actually, I think a lot of Western animation copied this from 90s anime. There's an awful lot of modern animation, certainly, that equates emotion to screaming.
Yeah.
Because it's a very obvious and very clear cut. Obviously, this guy feels more emotion right now because he's screaming! And it's like, yeah, but you could tell that a different way.
Yeah.
You don't have to always elevate the volume in order to make something have more impact. It's something that this film tends to get right, I think, because... A, there's a lot more subtle shit going on with the dark suggestions in the fight. Certainly with this fight scene, the suggestion of what would happen to Chun-Li if she loses is very dark. There's also the potential suggestion of what could happen to Ryo if he loses against Fei Long. It's not much, it's nowhere near as extreme, but there is the suggestion that he's going to get the fucking shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, because it's like a gang, isn't it, watching him.
And they thought he said something to slag off one of their main fighters. We actually don't know if he said anything to slag off the main fighter or not. Because they pull him in and he goes, hey, I didn't say anything. Our fighters don't take kindly to smart-ass comments, chicken, and throws him into the ring. But we don't hear whether or not Ryo actually says anything.
So, as we've said, I did, unfortunately, pass out for a little bit of this movie.
Hooray. It wouldn't be a VGMP movie unless you passed out once, Jeremy.
Joys of diabetes and not taking it seriously. Am I right in thinking... Or did I somehow dream this, although I don't quite know why I would have dreamt this?
Yep.
Is the ending of this film Ryu walking down a dirt track or a road, and out of nowhere, like some shocking, like, da-da-da music plays, and an 18-wheeler articulated lorry driven by M'Bison just appears behind him with M'Bison cackling like a madman, and the film just kind of ends?
No, Ryo jumps and he's about to kick the windscreen of the 18-wheeler, because that would save his life.
But it is a surprise 18-wheeler attack.
Yes, just out of nowhere. Bear in mind, this is a long, empty road. He's been dropped off by Ken And he's like, oh, maybe you want to come with me? He's like, no, I've got to go on my journey or whatever. He's a lonely walker. He goes off for his little lonely walk down the road. The credits start to play for about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And you get this sort of, oh, the ending of this great warrior's journey on the beginning of a new one. And then all of a sudden, here comes M. Bison in his fucking truck.
Which I'd assume, because you had told me to make sure I watched the credits. I assume that was why. Yeah.
Suddenly an 18-wheeler fucking came out of nowhere.
Bloody hell. So, Rory.
Yes.
Would you recommend this movie?
Yes. Of any of the one-on-one fighting films that I've seen so far, this is one of the best ones. It's honest. I half recommended Mortal Kombat. I would actually say, despite the fact that I much prefer Mortal Kombat as an overall franchise, this is a better film because the stakes ramp up well. The soundtrack is fantastic. That Chun-Li versus Vega fight is honestly one of the greatest. Well, it's got to be the greatest fight in animation I've ever seen. This film surprises me. Don't get me wrong. It's not deep. Yeah. The story is not clever by any stretch of the imagination. So if you're not into action, you definitely wouldn't get into it, I don't think. Mm. That being said, for me, you were the taste test on that, because I know you're not an action fan. And the fact that you didn't just rip this film a million ways to hell suggests to me, while it's not, you know, it's not going to win over any non-action fans, it's definitely recommendable by those who are fans of action films, and definitely for those who are fans of Street Fighter.
Mm.
What about yourself?
It's going to be a half recommend for me.
Okay.
I think Street Fighter fans should definitely check it out. I don't think anyone else would care. Precisely for the reason I stated, which is this isn't really a film. It's a collection of really cool fight scenes with a poorly strung together story.
Interesting.
I think Street Fighter fans will get a kick out of seeing their favourite characters, especially if their favourite characters happen to be some of the ones who get more of a focus here.
Sure.
Kind of sucks if your favourite character's Cammy, because she's in it for 2 minutes. Yeah. If that.
There's a lot of that, though, yes.
Doesn't really do anything. Yeah. But if your favourite is like Ken or Ryu or Chun-Li, Guile, M. Bison,
Vega. Even
Balrog
gets a little bit of a showing. Yeah,
Sagat gets a bit.
He does get a bit, but he doesn't get a lot. He's mostly in the intro, and then he's kind of cucked by M. Bison for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
There's a bit towards the end where it's like, please, let me go and face Ryu. It's for Warrior's Pride. He goes, Warrior's Pride means fuck all. Get out of here. And then just send Sagat somewhere else. So Sagat is not involved in the
finale.
I've just
worked out why I can't take M. Bison seriously as a villain.
Got him.
He's just a roided Dr. Eggman.
Dr. Roidman.
Seriously. The glasses, the red, sits around a lot.
But he has a hat.
You could put a hat on Eggman. Is he bald under the hat, do we know?
Has he ever been shown
without the hat?
Well, not in this film, actually. I just realised he gets fucking thrown upside down and all sorts. His hat never comes off. Do you reckon it's like a... You know where people like have wigs and stuff stitched into their hair? Do you reckon he's got like a few bits of hair and he's got the hat stitched into him?
I reckon if you took the hat off, there's just exposed brain underneath.
I don't think he's that smart.
I think that is the top of his head.
That is just his head?
Yeah.
You are doing some weird nightmarish shit that's akin to...
Eraserhead.
Yes, sir. You're doing some Eraserhead shit there where the nappy is part of the baby.
Oh, right. I've never seen Eraserhead.
Oh, God, it's awful.
Yeah, no.
See, I'm not that pretentious. I don't even like a razor head.
So, yeah, it's a half recommend from me, dog.
Cool. Well, there you go. That'll shut up the guy who sent the email, who said that, you know, we're pretentious. This is not a pretentious film by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, but it is old. He didn't like us recommending old shit, did he? We've got to take our dusty asses back to the arcade, remember?
Why does he like video gaming at all, then? Video gaming is old by the same metric.
Tale as old as time.
We should recommend to him that he watches some of the, I don't know, things like Starcade from the 80s. Mm. By the way, we are going to follow this film up a little bit later this year in one of our Run the Gauntlet episodes. We're going to be doing Street Fighter 2 Return to Fujiwara Capital, which was a short film that was a sequel to this movie. And then following that short film...
Did they go to Fujiwara Capital in this one?
I don't know. I just know that's the name of the film.
Is that where Fei Long was?
I don't know where Fujiwara Capital is. It's not mentioned by name in this film anyway. No. But yeah, so Return to Fujiwara Capital, and then we're not doing this one this year, but I've always wanted to watch it. There is actually a TV series called Street Fighter 2V, which is a sequel to this film as well. But I believe in release order it goes Street Fighter 2, the animated movie, Street Fighter 2, Return to Fujiwara Capital, and then Street Fighter 2V, the series.
Right.
Whereas I think Street Fighter 2V, Chun-Li becomes the main character rather than Ryu, which if they do that, it would make sense because she is a much more interesting character than he is.
Yes.
I don't mind Ryu being in it because he's a main character, but as you say, he's very one note. There's not really much progression you can do with his character, I don't think. But yeah, so that's something else for you and the fans to look forward to. There's going to be a sequel to this as a short later on this year. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I recommend this film. Jamie only half recommends it to those who are fans of Street Fighter already. Thank you very much for tuning in to this new episode of VGMP. You can catch up with us and discuss this film or anything else you want to discuss with us in the chat on Discord. You can find the Discord at www.vgmovie.co.uk. On that website, you can also find not only our backlog of or our back catalogue, but you can also find links to reference blogs that I've done for a certain amount of films that we've done that showcase all the different video game references from within the films that we've covered. If you want to check us out for any more, obviously you can subscribe. Please like, subscribe and comment on VGMP. You can also follow us on our sister show, also on Impala Network, called Second Take Cinema, or STC. And you can also check out Jamie running his own show on Impala Network of Haunted, the audio drama, which stars himself as a paranormal investigator, and it runs as an X-Files come Doctor Who style show. And every now and then I make an appearance, and I'm not totally annoying at all. Why did you write me as an annoying character, Jamie?
Can't imagine why.
I love it.
A real stretch for you to play, really. Really testing out your acting chops.
I have to really get into the mindset of an annoying person.
Yeah.
Really hard.
All right, you're so bastard.
Calm
down or else I won't buy you dinner.
I've got an illness. I've come round on my death.
Don't be a cunt then. And just to say again, if you have forgotten it, since we read that fan letter, we are open to receiving more fan mail. Or if you've got problems, if you've got a particular film you'd like to request, if you've got questions you'd like us to answer, please do feel free to write into us at info.impalafilms@gmail.com. And please be nice. Even if it's a complaint, I'm totally fine.
I was quite happy with that complaint. It was funny.
Just be nice. Don't be mean.
Yeah. We're old men. We need people to tell us they love us.
Yeah.
Do you love me, Jamie?
No.
Game over, yeah! Cyberpunk Studios.